now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Bays, the B-movie podcast from classic cult, so the cheese in between. The movies you're being entertainment is grade A, and I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti, and this time out, I'm going back to 1960 as I look at The Lost World, and I'll get to it right after this.
This is the greatest moment of your lives. There it is, directly ahead. A body of land uplifted by volcanic eruption 100 million years ago. The land where monsters live.
Yes, you're heading out of this world by jet airliner. By hydroplane, by helicopter, into the wildest of all jungles, into the forbidding headwaters of the Amazon. With Michael Rennie, Jill St. John, David Hedison, Claude Rains, Fernando Lamas, and Frosty the Poodle, as they discover a primitive world exactly the way it was at the dawn of time, in the most fantastic of adventure stories.
For me, the story started 3 years ago when Burton White came to me.
He told me of how in some Indian village out here in the jungle, he'd met a fever-stricken white man who babbled on about a plateau with monsters and diamonds.
Here is the most amazing of all possible worlds.
Oh! Oh! Johnny!
You'll see man-eating vines that lure their prey. Spiders as tall as trees. Hair-raising attack by prehistoric monsters. Ah! Battle of the Titans to the death. The most terrible creatures of destruction that ever walked the earth. You'll flee through grotesque underground mazes from cannibals who demand human sacrifice.
Sacrifice? The place they undoubtedly plan to kill you.
No, not me, please! Ah!
You'll be among the first mortals to cross the graveyard of the damned. You'll scale the incredible wall of death. You'll face the terrors of the Cave of Fire, with its lake of molten lava, its fabulous pyramid of diamonds. And you'll be stunned by the horrifying 100-foot fire monster that guards a king's ransom in treasure.
Thank you.
The Lost World was released July 13th, 1960. Hey, hey. 18 years before I was born. Anyway, with a 97-minute running time. Your director, of course, is the incomparable Irwin Allen. Now, Irwin Allen, of course, did all those different great movies that we know. Disaster movies, I should say, kind of thing. And your screenplay by Irwin Allen and Charles Bennett. Based on, of course, The Lost World, the 1912 novel by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Your producer here is none other than Irwin Allen and Cliff Reed. Irwin Allen had his fingers in all of this different thing. Your stars here, of course, are Michael Rennie, Jill St. John, David Henderson, Claude Rains, and Fernando Lamas. Your cinematographer is Wilton C. Hawk. Your editor was Hugh S. Fowler. Music by Paul Sautel and Bert Schaeffer. 20th Century Fox on the distribution for this. Your budget was of $1.5 million with a U.S. and Canada return of $2.5 million. Yes, this movie, yes, a lot of this is a very famous... this is a very famous adaptation that a lot of people know, and we'll get to why in a minute. All right. Our story opens with Professor Challenger, a celebrated biologist and anthropologist, reports to the London Zoological Society that he has discovered that living specimens of supposedly extinct animals, including dinosaurs, of an expedition to the Amazon basin and up a barely known plateau. He challenges the society to sponsor a second expedition to the plateau. Much to Challenger's dismay, he attracts a few unscientific people to join him on his second journey to the Amazon. The expedition group includes big game hunter Lord Jim Roxton, the newsman Ed Malone, who publisher advances $100,000 to pay for the expedition. The journey from London is depicted via aerial views of Rio de Janeiro and Angel Falls. The publisher's adventurous daughter Jennifer and son David join the group at the head of the Amazon. Also in the group is the Zoological Society bigwig Professor Summerlee, helicopter pilot Manuel Gomez, and his sidekick Jose Costa. Yeah, this is Claude Rains. Here is your he's your main scientist, wearing he's got on like glasses and he looks like an old man stuff and what. He got, you know, white hair and a beard and a whole nine. So, yes, the Invisible Man there, doing it all for you. So, during the first night of the plateau, they say it's a brontosaurus, wrecks the helicopter. We don't actually see it. As the expedition proceeds, Malone chases a primitive jungle girl through the cobwebs to a giant spider, killing it and bringing her back to camp. The native girl later falls for David. Roxton argues with the others, and jealousies over Jennifer lead to a fistfight between Malone and Roxton. Yeah, this movie is got all kinds of like drama they're trying to build into it. It's not just straight up dinosaur movie. This is very much straight up trying to give you some personal interactions. So you can. The diary, they discover the diary of a previous explorer, Burton White, who was lost on the plateau. Roxton is mentioned several times in the diary. Roxton reveals that he had visited a plateau 3 years before and claims the plateau holds a bounty of diamonds. This motivates Jose to stay with the party instead of striking out on his own and escape from the plateau. At one point, Malone and Jennifer are separated from the others and have a near-death encounter during a fight involving a brontosaurus and another dinosaur. So, okay, I keep saying brontosaurus. I'm going to say this. There's Komodo dragons. There's alligators. There's... that's not... I don't know. I think they're... I mean, they look like mostly Komodo dragons. I don't know. I mean, technically, they're probably monitor lizards, technically. There are no stop motion. There is no dinosaur stuff here going on by that. Anyway. Cannibals capture the party, but before they can become dinner, the jungle girl leads them to an underground passage and leads them off the plateau. Along the way, they encounter Burton White, now living as a blind hermit. The cannibals have a taboo against eating the blind. Why? I don't know, but it is. They encounter more obstacles, pursuit by cannibals, spider plants, the graveyard of the damned, and a dinosaur in a lava pit guarding the diamonds, which kills Costa. Gomez sacrifices himself while breaking a rock dam, killing the dinosaur. During the volcanic eruption, the survivors of the Challenger party escape from the plateau. Challenger's carrying the egg of a Tyrannosaurus Rex. The financial security of the party is secured because Lord Roxton filled out a couple of
bellowed pockets of his hunting jacket with diamonds and shared them with everyone. The dinosaur egg hatches. When it drops by accident, Pressure Challenger decides to take the infant T-Rex back to London with them, because what's the worst that could happen? Now, for those who remember the original Lost World, when the dinosaur runs about, the brontosaurus runs amok in England and whatever, it's based on the same ideas, but there's definitely some big differences. During the production of this, Irwin Allen had purchased the rights in 1959 for $100,000. And then obviously it was, okay. So none of the plans came to fruition. He was going to use, he wanted to make the film with Trevor Howard and Peter Ustinov in support of Reigns, as well as Victor Mature and Gilbert Roland, who had both been in 1925 film. None of these plans came to fruition, and he hired Charles Bennett to help him adapt the book and commissioned Willis O'Brien, who worked on the 1925 film, to do the models. He said he wanted to start filming in that. So the special effects from the film were rather basic and involved monitor lizards, iguanas, and a young crocodile. Sorry, I said alligator. Fixed with horns and fins. Director Allen later stated that though he wanted to do stop motion, he could only work with live animals according with the studio's budget. That's the entire thing of this movie. This whole movie is about the idea that it just costs too much to actually use stop motion animation. And the problem is that while it'd been really cool to have some stop motion animation, they knew there was no way they were going to be able to, be able to afford to do all the stop motion animation they had talked about. So what's going to wind up happening is you get a movie where you have monitor lizards and you have, iguanas and whatever else with horns stuck to them. Now, I have seen this movie plenty of times when I was younger. None of this was surprising to me. I knew it's all there. Haley, on the other hand, had not seen this movie, and she barely was watching, because that is about the par for the course with my daughter. She barely is involved with anything you want to do, except if piss and moan is on the menu, then she can do that to no one. No one out does that more than her. But what winds up happening is, you got to check out these cool dinosaurs. And she's like, all right. She looks. She goes, that's a lizard, Dad. That's an alligator, Dad. It's a crocodile. That's a whatever, Dad. I'm like, I know. And she's like, ugh. And then eye roll, and then went back to not paying attention to anything, as usual. But the cool part about this is that for people of a certain age, this was like big doing. In 1960, when this came out, they had hyped this movie up, and you're going to see dinosaurs and whatever. And we know Irwin Allen, right? I mean, some of us know Irwin Allen better than others. He utilized stock footage from this film for episodes of Land of the Giants, Lost in Space, The Time Tunnel, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. In 1966, Irwin Allen even tried to sell a TV series based on the film, as he had done with Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. He recycled footage going through there. It just, this movie is how to put this. This is exactly what a B movie is, right? You talk about, you have this huge budget, $1.5 million. We're going to do all these great effects, and then none of it actually occurs. The delivery on what's given to you is not exactly what was sold on the outside of the tin. But by the same token, I think this movie is campy in its own way, and I think it has to be this way. I mean, maybe that's because I grew up watching these kind of movies. But to me, if this movie had stop motion animation in it, I don't know. First of all, we'd have way less dinosaurs in it. It would have cost way more. And nothing against Willis O'Brien, because, Willis O'Brien, is responsible for, King Kong. But would the special effects held up? You think about Willis O'Brien, you think about the Black Scorpion and stuff, which has some really cool special effects in it. But would it have been okay here? I mean, this is now color. This is whatever. I mean, you're kind of shooting this movie differently. I mean, obviously, we're also on Ray Harryhausen's wheelhouse right here. And as always, anytime you have a stop motion animation, you're going to be compared to Ray Harryhausen, even though Willis O'Brien is the godfather of special effects, or stop motion, special effects. Harryhausen had kind of brought it to a whole new level, and The Lost World would have been lesser. And I don't mean that in a negative way towards Willis O'Brien, but I mean that it would not have been as up there as the special effects had been in the Dynamotion and all that stuff like that. Just the way it happens. You can think of Jack and the Giant, Jack the Giant Killer when you look at things like that. So, but anyway, this movie is beloved. There was a comic book adaptation of it. There's all kinds of stuff. This movie is a movie that kind of circulates every now and then. You know, kind of thing like FX Movies will show it or something like that, or it might be on Svengoolie or whatever. It's just a kind of movie that's fun. You know, it's not super deep. It's not super like, you know, you're not like, oh my God, I got to sit down and watch it. And maybe it's your favorite movie. I'm not saying it's not. Maybe it is your favorite movie, but it's certainly not my favorite movie. But it's a movie that I enjoyed watching. I haven't seen it in a number of years, and it was great just to be able to sit down and watch it. You know, now that, you know, again, spending some time away from it, it's just nice to be able to sit down and actually watch the movie. Now, is anything going to change the fact that there's giant lizards? No. And the crazy part is, even though it's giant lizards in the movie, you know, it doesn't, it's not like you can say, oh, you know, I think this will work. If they do a 4K restoration, it's nothing going to change this. Is there a Blu-ray of it? Yes. Does the Blu-ray look any better than it can look here? Probably not. The problem is the effects, again, it's a cult movie to be sure, but the effects are what the effects are going to be. There is no bumping this up. You know, there was obviously a DVD release, stuff like that. You're going to look at about the level you can see of this. You know, it's kind of where it's going to be. The crazy part is that, you know, some people are like, well, you know, this movie would look so much better if it cleaned it up. I'm telling you now, I don't think it would look any better, guys. I don't think it can get much cleaner than this. The version I watched, which was on FXM, I think, is probably the Blu-ray version anyway. It's as clean as it's going to get. I don't think cleaning it up anymore is going to change the fact that it's still lizards with horns glued onto them, you know, kind of thing. And if that's bothering you, it's not going to make a difference. It's not going to change it. It's not going to deepen the story. It's not going to make all of a sudden, you know, the people who are annoying less annoying, et cetera, et cetera. It's not going to change those things. What it will do, obviously, was just, you know, make it clearer to you that, like, you can see matte lines and things like that. But be as it may, this movie is a cult movie. This movie is camp. This movie is B. This is exactly in the wheelhouse of what Boss Bugs and Babes is all about. You know, if you enjoy this kind of movie, you probably already have seen it. If you've never seen it, and it sounds like something you really want to watch, check it out. It's totally, you can totally find this thing. It's not that hard to find. But by the same token, don't go into this thinking you're going to get like the Lost World, Jurassic Park kind of thing. Like, you're not getting that. You're getting, you know, kind of 1960, you know, dinosaur kind of fight. Now, there is a scene where the monitor lizard, and I know I called them Komodo dragons, they're the monitor lizards. The monitor lizard fights the juvenile crocodile. That would not be allowed. Some people might feel triggered by that. That would not be allowed nowadays. They let them actually fight on set, and then they kind of just shove them off the side of a board and watch them fall into the abyss, quote unquote, which is just a background. That 1960, things are very different then. Okay, it's a long, long time ago. Things were very different then. And what was allowed and what was not allowed is different. So don't start losing your mind and being, oh, you're okay with these animals fighting. Things were different. So just take that in mind. Anyway, do you have memories of The Lost World 1960 with Claude Rains? Did you see it in the theaters? I mean, if you're old enough to see it in the theater, it'd be something. Did you see it like part of a drive-in? Did you see it on like Svengoolie? Did you see whatever? Is it a movie you loved when you were a kid? Is it a movie you remember seeing when you were younger? And maybe it helps you get into dinosaurs. Were you super into dinosaurs when you were a kid, like most kids are? And you were like, I can't wait to see this movie. It's in color and dinosaurs and stuff. Let me know. Hit me up. I'd love to hear from you guys, you know, kind of thing. Like I said, I do this as a labor of love, guys. You know this. There is no money being made here. It's just me trying to, you know, extend to you guys some entertainment to maybe keep you entertained for, you know, the 20, 30 minutes I'm on here, 15 minutes sometimes if I'm in the movie. You know, to give you something to maybe distract you from what's going on. So, all right, folks, so that about wraps it up for The Lost World here. We're going to exit the plateau, you know, kind of thing. So, like we say here, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. an unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc., are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?